This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Was Hurricane Sandy a freak once-in-a-century storm? Or can we expect more and worse as planet Earth heats up? What about Asia and the Pacific, where Japan was raked by a series of tropical cyclones this fall? A giant storm just battered the Philippines, again? Are those climate-related? We are lucky to have an extreme weather specialist and atmosphere scientist here to help, Columbia University Professor Adam Sobel. Just published his new book, Storm Surge, Hurricane Sandy, Our Changing Climate and Extreme Weather of the Past and Future. Adam, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate you showing up for this. This is an important subject. Now, you just returned from South Korea from an invitation-only conference on tropical cyclones. What can you tell us about that?
Right. The conference is called the International Workshop on Tropical Cyclones. It happens every 4 years, and it's organized by the World Meteorological Organization, which is an outgrowth of the UN. And it's a meeting where tropical cyclone forecasters and researchers get together to discuss the advances in the science in the last 4 years, and in both research and in forecast practice, and try to set the agenda for the next 4 years. So it's a meeting of people from all over the world, and you get from it a good sense of what's happening in the field of tropical cyclones.
Now, at this Korean conference, was there an agreement that climate heating and rising seas are playing a role, or do some meteorological experts continue to put down the role of climate change?
It's interesting. This meeting, I haven't been to it before, but I've read the proceedings from the previous ones and know many people who've attended it. And first of all, it's important to say that a lot of the meeting is not about climate change at all, but it's just about the details of how tropical cyclones work and how they're forecast on the short time scale. But a significant portion of it is about climate, both sort of longer-term forecasting out to a season and then what climate change will do. And I was actually in charge of putting together the chapter of the report that comes out of the meeting on that with a number of other people. And I think in the past few versions of this meeting, climate change has been quite a contentious topic. There's been a lot of growth in the last 10 years in people studying the field of climate change and hurricanes since really about Katrina. There was sort of an explosion in the field. And I think it's become a little less contentious now. It's not that everyone agrees about everything, but I think it's become clearer what we know and what we don't know and what the boundaries of our knowledge are. So I think most people agree that as the climate warms, we expect tropical cyclones to get stronger on average. And so the most extreme ones will probably become more extreme. And so something like Haiyan that happened last year in the Philippines, which was the most extreme cyclone arguably ever to make landfall in known meteorological history, events like that, although they'll remain rare, will become less rare, and that's quite frightening. And I think there's more or less agreement on that. There's agreement more or less that the rainfall associated with tropical cyclones will become more intense on average. And so this event, Hagupit, that made landfall in the Philippines, that turned out not to be such an intense storm, but the threat from that one seems to be mostly rainfall-driven flooding. And events like that may become more extreme as well. I think it's also clear that the latest models are tending to indicate that there will be fewer tropical cyclones in the future, and that's a result that I think we don't understand as well. The intensification and the rainfall is not only something that models do, but something that we understand why the models do that, and we can say something about the physics of that, whereas the decreasing frequency is something that most models are telling us, and we have some ideas why, but it's not as clear. So fewer storms, more intense, more rainfall, those are sort of the outlines of what we think we know and how well we know it. There's some uncertainty on all of those predictions. And especially as you look to individual regions, that becomes more uncertain because those are all global predictions that I just made. And the final thing I think that we more or less agree on is that we can't quite detect these changes clearly in the current climate. It doesn't mean they're not happening, but there's so much natural variability from year to year and even decade to decade that any slow trends that are there due to climate are hard to see clearly. So when we ask, is a particular storm due to climate change, those kinds of statements are very hard to defend, even though climate change may well be increasing our risk year to year, but it's doing so slowly enough that on top of the natural variability, it's hard to detect it.
Yeah, when it comes to the North Atlantic, I remember back in 2006 when New England scientist Emmanuel Carey produced papers saying hurricanes would be more frequent due to climate change. Then he sort of backtracked, and it seems to me they haven't been more frequent since the year 2000 compared to the late 1900s. What is the record on Atlantic hurricanes?
Right. So the Atlantic hurricanes have oscillated over the years with at many frequencies, but including on multi-decadal timescales. So you're right. I mean, we were in an active period for a while. The 50s and 60s were quite active, and then it was quiet for a couple decades, and then it picked up again. The last 10 years, since Katrina, really, have been quiet. There hasn't been a major hurricane, meaning a Category 3 or above, making landfall in the last 9 years, which is probably a random occurrence. Landfalls of major hurricanes in the U.S. are always rare and chancy, and so they come and go, and I don't think we can assign it to climate change one way or the other, but it is a notable drought. Yeah, Emmanuel and a couple of other papers pointed out big increases in the Atlantic over about a period from about the 70s to the mid-2000s. That sparked a lot of debate over whether that was a climate change signal. I think most of us now think that there may have been some climate change in there, but a lot of it appears to have been due to the relative warming of the Atlantic relative to other oceans. Hurricanes cared more about not how warm the planet is. That matters somewhat, but what matters even more is how warm the given patch of ocean they're in is relative to the rest of the ocean. So the Atlantic went through a period of relative warming, though that may not be the whole explanation. That seems to have been part of what was happening in the period leading up to that 2006 paper.
So let's get to your book, Storm Surge. I guess the title implies you think our focus on Sandy should be the storm surge. What is that really, and what happened when the ocean invaded Manhattan and the boroughs?
Right. Storm surge is a phenomenon when the wind of a storm pushes on the ocean and moves it onto the land. It's really similar in some ways to a tsunami, although the cause is, of course, completely different. Tsunamis are caused from earthquakes at the bottom of the ocean, and storm surges are caused by wind. But it's really a very, very large, slow-moving wave, or in some cases not so slow-moving, but a wave that just sloshes the water up onto the land. And it was quite severe in Sandy because although by its peak winds, Sandy wasn't that powerful a storm. It had the winds of a Category 1 hurricane. But because it was so large and because it was coming into shore at a particularly bad angle, it pushed the water strongly into New York Harbor. And New York Harbor is shaped kind of like a triangle with a point where the city is, and the water got squeezed in and pushed up onto the land. And quite a lot of the city and the surrounding regions as well, in New Jersey, Long Island, are quite low-lying. There's a lot of our infrastructure and our neighborhoods that were built on land that prehistorically was either wetland or barrier island, which is basically glorified sand dunes, or landfill. I mean, land that was water before Columbus's time that was put in by the Dutch and English colonists. And so all of those areas were historically and still are quite close to the water and close to flooding, and those are the regions that all flooded, and some of it had critical infrastructure like power substations and transit tunnels that filled up with water, and so the city was, and the surrounding areas were just very vulnerable, is what we learned.
A guest, Professor J. Court Stevenson from the University of Maryland, suggested New York City could build tide gates at the three main entrances to the harbor for about $10 billion. And considering the damage from Sandy alone was four times that, it didn't sound impossible. What have you seen and heard about New York City's plans to protect itself against the next superstorm?
Right. So the tide gate idea is something that's been around for a while, since well before Sandy. And for a little bit, Sandy put some new energy into those who were proposing that. The city made a plan in the last days of the Bloomberg administration, which did not include tide gates, but included many other smaller scale measures. You know, the argument for tide gates is that they seem to solve the problem completely, but it's not clear that they really do. I mean, first of all, $10 billion, I think, is a little bit at the low end of the numbers that I've heard, and it would probably take a couple of decades to do all the studies necessary to actually do the work. In the meanwhile, sea level will be rising, and one of the arguments against tide gates, besides that they're quite expensive and that they don't protect everyone, but only those inside them, and it can even make the flooding a little worse for those outside them, potentially. But I think the other argument against them is that eventually sea level rise will make them obsolete, and in the meantime, people may become complacent if they think that the problem's been solved by tide gates. I myself am somewhat agnostic about it. I'm not an engineer, and I think, you know, these cost-benefit decisions are complex, and the studies really would need to be done to evaluate them. But at the time being, it seems to be moot because the city's not proposing to do it, and it's not going to happen without that. So in the meantime, we're doing a lot of other smaller scale measures, and the new mayor administration seems to be following up on what Bloomberg's group had proposed and implementing a lot of other measures to insulate critical infrastructure and housing, and even to a very limited extent, moving people out of the most vulnerable areas, which is something we probably should consider more as time goes on.
How much has sea level gone up around New York City in the past 100 years, and what's being predicted, say, for 2050 or 2100?
Yeah, this is the most important part of the story, I think, when we want to connect Sandy to climate change. The sea level in the last 100 years here has risen around a foot, of which roughly two-thirds of that is due to the warming climate, which both makes the water swell up that's already in the ocean and also adds more water to it as ice on land melts. The other third is natural and is due to the subsidence of the land in recovery from the last ice age. So that's about a foot, of which the better part is due to climate, and that added to Sandy's 9-foot storm surge to make the damage worse. So I think if you want to find a climate change contribution to Sandy, that's the most important one. And if we look to the future, the sea level predictions are uncertain quantitatively, but certain qualitatively. In other words, we know that the sea level is rising and that will increase our risk of future flooding disasters, apart from any changes in hurricanes that might happen. And in fact, the sea level rise is quite more certain than the changes in hurricanes are. So the projections in the most recent IPCC report put by 2100 as much as a meter sea level rise. I think actually that's conservative and is, first of all, it's an increase in the estimate since the last IPCC report. And if you read the literature, there's estimates higher than that, even as high as 2 meters. So several feet by the end of the 21st century is quite possible. So if you think about Sandy had a 9-foot surge on top of a 5-foot tide, 3 feet or even more than that of sea level rise is really quite a big change and will make it such that absent at any major changes in our infrastructure to deal with that higher water, it'll take a much weaker storm to produce a flooding level that Sandy produced. And so events like that will become much more common even without any huge changes in the climatology of the storms.
Radio EcoShock.
Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Listeners, you are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Columbia University professor and atmospheric scientist Adam Sobel. So moving on beyond the storm surge, there have been a lot of guesstimates about the contribution of hotter seas, as you mentioned, off New England, plus the extra water vapor in a warmer atmosphere. What do we know about these other synergies between climate change and superstorms?
Well, superstorm, of course, is not a technical term. It was a term that was coined for Sandy because of the fact that Sandy was predicted not to be technically a hurricane at landfall, but a winter-type storm. But it was really sort of a hybrid, and so not knowing what to call it, the name superstorm was invented. But I think it's important that you use that term because it does make the point that while we do know a fair bit about hurricanes, and we talked at the beginning about how climate change will affect hurricanes, which are tropical cyclones, and so we do expect them to get more intense as a result of a warming climate, and that is partly due to the rising sea temperatures and the water vapor and the factors that you mentioned. Storms like Sandy, which are hybrid and part hurricane, part winter storm, are more typical of what we get at these higher latitudes, where a hurricane in New York and further north than that, a true pure tropical hurricane is pretty rare, and the biggest storms of our history, such as the 1938 storm, for example, were all, if they weren't hybrids like Sandy, they were starting to go in that direction. And so I think we know even less about those than we know about normal hurricanes. So I think there's really a great deal of research to be done to understand our particular region, and even more further north in New England and Canada, and similar regions in Asia, for example, like Japan and China and Korea, we really need to do some research on how these kind of hybrid storms will respond to climate change, because we just haven't studied it much. But as far as the normal tropical storms, we do expect more intense, but perhaps fewer, and what that means is not completely clear. It depends whether which one is a stronger effect, but it could well mean that even though there are fewer storms, that the more intense ones do happen more often, which is quite worrying. And it's important to emphasize again that as far as coastal flooding disasters from storm surge, which is what kills the most people in many regions, is what killed the most people in Sandy, is what killed the most people in Haiyan, is storm surge. Because of the rising sea level alone, those kind of events are going to become more common, and I think that's something that's become clearer in the last few years.
And I see in your bio notes you offered a course at Columbia University called Hurricane Sandy Science Impacts Response. What do you tell your students about their developing future?
Well, in that course, we looked at all the different dimensions of Sandy, and not just the storm itself, but the city's infrastructure and insurance and beach erosion. I had many experts from many different fields. So there was no unique message, but I think what's important to understand is not just the role of climate change, which is certainly increasing many risks we face, even though we can't necessarily pin every storm on it. We nonetheless have to understand how the climate change is making us more vulnerable, but also the consequences of development decisions that are unwise and due to the fact that we develop our infrastructure and our cities and our coastlines over many years in the face of relatively rare events so that we don't necessarily think about those events. So we build in low-lying places. We put, you know, subway tunnels underground without any way to stop the water from getting in. We don't build high enough seawalls around our power generators, and it takes a big disaster to make us recognize those things. But over time, we're more and more developing in risky coastlines because people like living by the water, and so hurricane damages are going up very, very quickly over the course of the 20th century, even without any large trends in hurricanes, just because of more development. And in the developing world, that puts more lives at risk as people are living in dangerous places. And I think we need to understand that, the consequences of those decisions, just as much as we need to understand the consequences of burning carbon.
Now, what approach did you take in your book, Storm Surge? How is it organized?
The first half of the book is a set of alternating chapters where one chapter describes a day in the life of Sandy, framed in terms of forecast advisories and discussions from the National Hurricane Center in many of the chapters, and then explanation in non-specialist language of what they mean to describe what the storm was doing day by day. And those chapters are alternated with chapters of scientific background explaining different aspects of the science. Some are historical, such as about the history of weather forecasting and how the science of that developed, and history of tropical meteorology, which is really quite a fascinating subject. So that's the first half of the book. It's sort of explaining what Sandy's doing day by day, and it ends with landfall and all the decisions that had to be made leading up to landfall, and then all the damage that the storm did and the immediate aftermath. And then the second half of the book is about the larger picture, what it means for the future, and that gets into the role of climate change and development and all those broader questions that the storm raised for us here in the region and in the nation about how we think about the future now that we understand that some of our largest urban areas are quite vulnerable.
Adam, were you in New York City when Hurricane Sandy struck?
I was, yes. I was here. I was seeing it coming in the week leading up to it as the forecasts were being made, which were quite accurate. I was following it, and I was sitting in my apartment all day, mostly talking to the media like this, as it was making landfall. We weren't supposed to go outside, but at the end of the day, right after landfall, I did, just to go down to the Hudson River and see the high water, because it was a historic moment. So I got a few photos of that and have my own memories of it. I was fortunate in that my neighborhood didn't flood and didn't lose power, so we were safe. But the city, of course, was paralyzed, and with its transit system not functioning and other things not working. And so I went through that along with millions of other people.
Well, it's almost like a storm 9/11 in a way for New York City. And we found out after that storm how critical New York City is to our economic system. I think it's almost a national security issue that we have this city able to operate despite storms that might come. We've been talking with Columbia professor and atmospheric scientist Adam Sobel. You can find his new book, Storm Surge, Hurricane Sandy, Our Changing Climate and Extreme Weather of the Past and Future, anywhere books are sold. Of course, I've got links to his website, the book website, a great radio interview with Adam that he did with Leonard Lopate of WNYC, New York Pacifica Radio. You can find all those links in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. Adam, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me, Alex.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.